Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for calling in to this special roundtable discussion with my colleagues from Uganda, the Burera University of Science and Technology in Western Uganda, specifically in the Kasese district associated with the Bugoye Health Center. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, sir, for hosting us. I'm Bwambale Shem from Uganda, particularly Kasese district. I head a facility called the Bugoye Health Center. I'm a clinician by training and specialized in management of ear, nose, and throat conditions. Besides the training, I head this facility, Bugoye, so I also do administration work at the facility. We have a number of services that we offer. We do clinical work. We see patients in outpatient department. We also have a small inpatient department. We also treat people with HIV/AIDS. We have a special clinic supported by Mbarara University and MGH that is looking at the health of people with hypertension. Then, as a facility, we have been trained to supervise village health workers down there at community level. Maybe I will add on as we discuss. Otherwise, I'm happy to be associated with MGH and Barrow University. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shem. Thanks for being here. And, you know, I think you bring up an important point that in this roundtable discussion, we're going to be looking more closely at the work that you guys do with community health workers, specifically the volunteer community health workers in this district of Uganda.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Ntaro Moses. I'm a public health scientist working with the Department of Community Health in Barra University of Science and Technology. And specifically for our discussion, roundtable discussion on community health workers, I'm a trainer who trains trainers. So I train trainers who train VHTs. I don't do only that. I go ahead to supervise the trainers, how they train VHTs. I supervise VHTs to see how they perform their duties and also hear the expectations. So, and I've been doing this for quite some time, maybe over 8 years. So I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much, Moses.
Yeah, I'm Edgar Mlogo. I'm working with the Department of Community Health, Mbarara University of Science and Technology. We train health professionals using a community-based medical education curriculum. And part of a lot of this curriculum focuses on training these health professionals within communities to engage communities. And as part of this, there's a lot of interaction with community health workers within the communities. And I have been overseeing this program for the last 15 years or so. And currently, I am providing leadership and stewardship to a program that is implemented by community health workers that brings together unique partners. It is a partnership between an international organization, MGH, an academic institution, Mbarara University of Science Technology, and a local government, Kasese Local District Local Government, that really, together through this partnership, has supported over the past 7 years, has supported volunteer community health workers to implement a number of interventions in Kasese District.
Thank you, Edgar. And this is a unique opportunity to talk to leaders in academia, administration, and clinical care about this outreach program, this village health team program that you have with volunteer community health workers in Uganda, specifically also looking at how ultimately this program will adapt to possible plans for a national paid community health worker cadre. And these are important questions for people who want to develop national programs at scale that are effective and impactful, building upon years of volunteer community health workers working hard in their communities to improve mortality and save lives and improve just lives. So let's get in. First, just give our listeners a little bit of context of where you work and what the program looks like. Let's do what we call a quick Five Spice analysis. You know, Five Spice was a model that we developed at Partners in Health to help think of all the five essential elements necessary to build a highly impactful and effective community health worker program. It's an acronym, but it pretty much amounts to what are the tasks being asked to the community health workers to do? Who are the people doing those tasks? How are they educated? How are they paid? And how are they supervised and mentored? So just to kind of quickly go around the table, what are the tasks that these VHTs are asked to perform?
So the VHTs, who started up around 2009, were initially tasked to provide health education, health promotion messages within communities. But after some time, with the development of the ICCM strategy, a treatment platform was added to their job brief. And so they were then trained to manage malaria fever, essentially, malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea in under five children within communities. So this is what they are currently doing, in addition to the old brief of health promotion and health education within the communities.
Wonderful. And do they have a home visit component to their work?
So they do. They do home visits, especially in the effort to improve WASH in families. So when they do home visits, they are looking at facilities, latrines being available at household. They are looking at hand washing facilities. They are looking at dispose of waste at household. So that one is done at households when they visit. Then they also look at the immunization status. That's the aspect of the health promotion aspect. So indeed, they do home visits. The other additional aspect that I also wanted to say, these link, they are the first linkage for the community, the health center. So one of the things they also do is to refer conditions, the health facilities that they cannot handle at that level.
Wonderful. So who are some of the people that do this? There's probably a wide variety, but could you give us a sense of the average profile of these community health workers?
Okay, so the community health workers constituted into village health teams are essentially five in each village. At a community meeting, the members of the village select people they would want to be community health workers or village health team members in their villages. And this is based on the trust they have in these people. So they are nominated and people vote on who should be the community health worker in that particular village. So once this is done and that they are nominated, appointed, they are then trained in these various aspects from out of the health facility. In some cases, you have district trainers where there is an opportunity, you get a national trainer to complement the training program. And so once they are trained, then they are given the tools. If it is ICCM, they are provided with the medical commodities to begin the treatment of the conditions we talked about. If it is health promotion, they are provided with some sort of literature to provide and to conduct this health education and health promotion at the household level.
Wonderful.
Yes, maybe additionally, during a community meeting, when the community is supposed to elect these health workers, the committee members are advised, because it's a requirement that a village health worker should be able to read and write at least the local language. But English is an additional advantage because it's the medium of instruction. And we also advise that the people elected should at least be stable residents of the villages in order to avoid attrition. Because sometimes people are always rushing to look for green pastures. You elect someone today, the following day has gone out of the village, and therefore you can't find him to do the job. So we advise that such people elected should be stable residents in villages in order to serve our communities.
And how do you confirm that people know how to read and write and their language proficiency? Is there a test or an interview process?
Honestly, that one is difficult to say that happens, but this is the trust of the communities. They are given the initial guideline. Of that's the guideline that is read to them. The person you are going to select should be able to do this and this. However, confirming that it is possible cannot be justifiable. But the issue is that they know they have tasks of completing reports.
Right.
Yeah, because and therefore we naturally we think somebody who knows I cannot read, I cannot write, we opt out. that's the assumption. Yeah, of course, it has had challenges because when you bring out this, you're also trying to say how is this verified and how does it become effective. We also know there have been also a bit of challenges, especially in some aspects of selection, where maybe it has not been done well, and maybe there have been some nominations, maybe a local leader selects some people without the universal coverage. But those, I think, are also challenges into the aspect.
All over the world, for sure. It's not uncommon to have what's called elite capture, in which if it looks like a good job, the powerful people in the community say, oh, it'll be my son or daughter and pressure people. I'm assuming you've seen that by your...
Yes.
It's happened.
And what can you do to sort of prevent that from happening make sure it doesn't happen to an extent that it hurts the program?
I think what has happened before is that we try to ask about the actual residences of the people who are proposed as the VHTs. If we find that they are clustered within, because if they are relatives to the village leader, most likely the households are clustered around where the village leader stays, then we ask the community or the village leadership to review the process and sort of have a re-election and zone out the village.
Great.
Yeah.
So, for example, the level where Shem is saying as the in charge of a facility, VHTs have a catchment. I mean, the health center, the nearest health center in a village is the supervisor to the VHTs. And at that level, there is somebody who's in charge of, at the facility, at the health center, who's in charge of health promotion activities. So sometimes called a health assistant, sometimes a health inspector. So normally, the weakness normally comes in improper selection if there is no much supervision at the village level. So where the chairman are not supervised, so that's where weakness comes. But I think when the system is strengthened and there have been supervision, the facilities get involved, I think it becomes less and less.
And in Ibugwe, you have engaged the politicians a lot. We have been able to call them. They come to the facility. We come to them. We take them through the agenda of the VHTs so that when they go back to their villages, they know exactly the tasks of the VHT. And therefore, since they have the knowledge, they may not be tempted to involve only their relatives. They will be able now to look wider.
Interesting.
In order to cover their village.
And so after this process has occurred, is it an ongoing process, or was this a while ago so that they were all selected? You know, have these community health workers been in work for decades, years, or months?
Yeah, true. It is. There is only what we call replacement in case VHT, maybe attrition has happened.
Yeah.
And normally, like I'm trying to mention that there is somebody responsible at a health center, whom I said, like a health assistant, who who should be able to run re-elections to come up with a new VHT in case that some villages are lacking. This has been a challenge because of resources. Otherwise, the structure would be there, but sometimes if they are not facilitated, you find that there are some villages which have not had the replacement of VHTs.
But on average, do you think that the majority of the workforce right now, these community health workers, they've been in practice a long time?
Yes, the current community health workers were set up, as I said, in 2009.
Yeah.
And essentially, they are the same people.
Same.
Well, you could say it is like a lifetime job unless you leave the village.
Yeah.
Or some...
Earth.
Yes.
Or Earth.
Yes.
So it happens.
Yeah.
Okay, well, wonderful. And on average, the people who are selected, tell me a little bit of what they look like. Men, women, younger, older, they have other jobs, they're retired.
Yeah, Shame, you can...
Basically, all age groups are inclusive.
Yeah.
We have young men and girls. We also have retired men.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for instance, we have an old man called Adrian. He's a retired health worker. He no longer has any black hair in his head, but at least he's able to do community health work.
Yes.
Yes, so all ages, inclusive.
But note that is above 18 years of age.
Has to be above 18.
Yes.
Yeah, although like we also earlier mentioned, although we may not have the clear statistics now, but most of the times communities who tend to trust people have been there for a while.
Mm.
Like Shem mentioned the criteria earlier, that it has to be somebody who they feel will not be moving away in maybe the week they have selected him. So older people tend to be the VHTs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I think up to now we can say it is more women.
Yes.
More women than men who are currently. Although we have started seeing men involvement in VHT, which is wonderful, but I think women are still the most. They are more than the men in the ratios.
Gotcha.
So for each village, the guidance is that at least 30% should be women, but apparently it is way above that. Most of them are women.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. And you started to talk a little bit about the training, but tell me a little bit more about what their initial training looks like, followed by their ongoing training.
Mm-hmm. The initial training, which was to equip them with competences for health education and health promotion, was a 5-day training in which the are provided with information. Remember that these people, we said the criteria is that they should be able to read and write in the local language.
Mm.
So a number of them, of course, we have a diverse range of education among them. The example he gave of Adrian was a health worker who had actually achieved a lot of school, possibly.
Yes.
But generally speaking, the majority of them are people who have completed elementary school or half elementary school in a number of cases. So the initial training, of course, as we said, is on health education and health promotion techniques, entry into communities, interviewing people in communities, and things like that. So with the treatment platform that was added, the ICCM strategy, you have a comprehensive 6-day training, because in this they should be able to diagnose certain conditions, they should be able to record whatever information they pick up, they should be able to treat these children. So it is more elaborate and more rigorous.
Mm.
So essentially, so the guideline is that every quarter, every 3 months, they should come in for refresher training, what we call refresher training.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, due to resource constraints, once they get the initial training, That's the last time you see them around until maybe they bring in reports to the health facility.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a bit of a challenge in that area. They're kind of left on their own.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, that's when it brings up a critical question around supervision,
mm-hmm.
and especially around volunteer health cadres,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of times the reason why they're volunteers is because of lack of resources,
mm-hmm.
but then lack of resources also leads to challenges with supervision, which leads to challenges with ongoing training.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are creative ways people have gotten around this.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about what is the type of supervision that you've tried to implement in this challenging context.
I'm happy that the Edgar mentioned clearly on the general, overall general, what is happening as far as the VHD program in Uganda, where supervision has been a challenge. So what we bridge when we come in as in our partnership, those are some of the areas that we've tried to bridge to make sure that what has been planned earlier happens. So the supervision that at this level is that every trainer and our trainers are the health workers at the facility, at the health center. Those are the trainers.
Uh-huh.
And they also double as the supervisors.
Uh-huh.
So the levels of supervision, I can say, they're both maybe two. One is that during the refresher training, when the VHTs quarterly come to the facility, that's an opportunity for supervision. So we have the trainers should be able to ask what have been the challenges, what's not going on well, where do you need more training, so that happens. Another level of supervision is that quarterly, the trainer who's a health worker is allocated a number of VHTs where they visit them to the village and be able to look at exactly what is the VHT doing. We encourage them, especially in the initial time, to make sure they do this when a VHT has a patient for the aspect of ICCM, so they are able to know, give some feedback of proper management and where improvement is required. So that is another key aspect of supervision. I think those are the levels so far where where we are doing some supervision. Do you think the other Shem?
Yes, Moses.
Yeah.
There is also another level of the politician, because at the subcounty level in Ibugoye, the top political leadership of the subcounty is also involved. They also join the supervisory teams to the villages to make sure that one, the VHTs are doing a good job.
Mm.
And to ensure that the committee members are satisfied with the job. You know, sometimes there may be a question of mistrust by the committee members that probably the VHT could somehow misuse the medicines, the supplies given out.
Yeah.
So the politician on top is able to build that trust in the community, and maybe also give encouragement to the VHTs to do their job right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so then the ability to have a constant supply chain of medications is in itself a critical part of performance. In a way, it's almost a form of supervision because you know how much they'll need and how much you'll go. Has supply chain been a challenge? And what techniques have you used to try to make sure that it's as good as possible?
Yes, it's a challenge because sometimes the VHT has not received a full package because sometimes we receive medicines from and supplies from government. You'll find this time around government has delivered only medicines without supplies, and yet you know this VHT has to perform an RDT in order to diagnose malaria.
Mm.
But we realize they have brought an RDT, but there are no gloves.
Mm.
But because of the partnership we are talking about, we have been able to cover all those challenges that this time around a VHT is able to have all the medicine that he needs and all the supplies, protective gear, that he has to put on while performing an RRDT.
And that's the partnership with MGH and the district hospital and the district.
Mbarara University.
And the university and the local government. Yeah.
There is something Shane brought up which I think is very critical, like we were talking about if they are, you know, scaling up of national programs. The aspect of involving local leadership into the supervision of the care. For example, in the case of Bugoye, you know, our leadership structure in Uganda, where we have a sub-county is the smallest, I think, independent government, the local government, which can function independently and make budgets and have leadership and all those things. So at that level, there is a management committee where there is the sub-county leadership, where there is Shem who heads the facility, there is a community representative, and they make a management team which still oversees the implementation of the ICCM at that level. And I think it has been a very powerful, you know, arm to build this program.
Wonderful. And mind you, that's sometimes easier said than done. So it, you say it so beautifully, but I'm sure that other people try and they fail horribly when they get kicked out of the, you know, president's office or they... you know, get into some other political trouble. So we don't have time to get into those stories. That'll be for later over some beers. But so final question, of course, for how these programs are structured is payment. We know they're volunteers, but there are many different types of incentives. What are some of the ways that you've found work to incentivize these volunteer cadres?
Yeah, I think... I'll also talk about the previous experience and then I'll wind up with the current implementation that we are doing currently. Subsequently, the first VHT program I got involved in, we tried to assess, do a research, look at what was motivating VHTs as an incentive. And of course, they gave a number of things. One was to see that their community's health have improved. And they're no longer having children, you know, high morbidities and mortalities was an incentive to them. The following one was the recognition. They felt every time they go anywhere, so our VHT, our local doctor, you know, they give them a number of titles. And so it was very good for them to see that that is happening. The other one they mentioned was the trainings they were receiving. They said they were, of course... The trainings that they were adding on the education they had long time ago. So it was an opportunity for them to have more knowledge and, you know, interact. And I think later they wound up giving the gifts that they were receiving, sort of the surprise they have, the umbrellas they get. Then when it comes, of course, to our own program currently that we are implementing in the partnership, although we have not yet done it systematically, to say this is a study which has been done to look at the incentives and the motivation for the VHTs. But at least what we do is whenever they come for trainings, there's some sort of a transport refund that they receive, which is, you know, they think that's a good thing. When they bring in their reports, the transport refund given onto them also back. And of course, the trainings they receive every time they come for training, they also feel that has built them up. And I think it's not much different from the previous one I've mentioned. Also, the respect they receive in the communities as the healthcare providers at that level.
Yeah.
Key, the relationship they get also at the facility. That trainers and the health workers, when they refer a patient, I remember we had a meeting with them one time when we had the refresher training, and they said, one of the things that pains us if we send a patient and is not received, we're not recognized that we have referred a patient. It is something that we feel it treats us negatively. But that's an aspect that has been strengthened. So there's a strong relationship of anybody referred. I think that's what's also happening, Shame, that if a community member comes with a referral letter from the community, he's quickly given care first before the others who do not have referrals. And that is a very good thing that VHTs feel they are being honored at the facility when they send in patients. I think, you know, anybody can also add, but I think those are some.
Yeah, additionally, Dan, you know, in Africa, there is this idea of collective responsibility.
Mm.
Because for us down there, if someone passed on in our village, we go for a night vigil. Every village member will spend a night at the place where someone died. And another thing, in a village, people are somehow related. Their uncles, their aunties, their daughters in law. So these people, the VHTs, they feel they have a duty to treat their own people. And even if they don't do it, when someone died, they will still go to the deceased's place, even when it's cold, even when it has rained. So that alone drives them to do voluntary work. Yes.
And the ratios, the amount of work that they're doing is an important question too, because there's, you know, well, let me ask this. How many households is each one responsible for?
20 to 30.
Yes. So if on average, you know, 4 to 8 people in a household, you're talking about around 200?
Yes, 300.
200 to 300.
Yes.
That ratio is quite reasonable. You know, a lot of countries' programs have ratios up to the 1,000, 2,000 mark. you know, it's interesting because what we're trying to do on all these programs is build programs that function, meaning that mortality is reduced, people don't quit, people don't burn out.
Yes.
The worst thing would be to give someone a volunteer job that is so poorly managed and stocked out that they just watch people die, and they don't only lose the job, but they lose standing in the community because of these social phenomenon that you're describing, this social construction. It sounds to me like you guys have created a system in which people are able to really benefit the most from their labor because the job is reasonable. Tell me about attrition. How much attrition have you seen in this project? Meaning people leaving the job because they quit, they don't want to do it anymore.
I would say that in our model, attrition has been very low.
Very low.
Very low. And the attrition that we have observed is because, as we said, when you have young people, they may decide to get married and therefore move village. So that's the kind of attrition we've seen.
Yes.
We have not seen attrition due to burnout,
no.
Due to being overwhelmed by responsibilities related to the community health worker tasks.
Mm.
Yeah, so we haven't seen that kind of attrition. And I think we are thankful for the issues that Moses mentioned and Shem mentioned, those perks that come with the job. These may look like small things, but to people at that level, they are very important.
Yeah.
And this is what encourages them to stick around, and with all that hope of always thinking that one day,
yes,
it might be a bigger apple, you know, that comes to them. Okay.
Yes.
So they have that hope. But I think one thing that was not mentioned, I think that is critical, is our VHTs or community health workers. The institution that Shem heads has brought a number of them on board to support clinical services at the health facility. For example, patient record management and this kind of thing.
Right.
So now they are closely entwined with the health facility.
Yes.
Right.
And they feel that if they left that calling, they would lose a number of things like access to health care for their children or their relatives and that kind of thing. So it is a job you would want to hold on.
Right.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah, right.
Which in itself is a form of payment. I mean, because if payment is the distribution of resources,
yes,
then access to high quality free health care for your family members.
Right.
One of the biggest causes of attrition all over the world for community health workers, volunteer community health workers, is catastrophic expenditures for their families.
Yes.
Someone gets sick and you simply can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it sounds like to me that in addition to building a better health system with a better supply chain and better access to care with a reasonable job that is actually enjoyable and has social benefits, you have a wonderful cadre of community health workers that are dedicated and working hard and doing a great job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now the question is, how do we get this to a national level? And how do we get this across sub-Saharan Africa, across the world, from Asia to Latin America? The government has some plans. There's a lot of talk now about creating a national paid cadre of workers. I wanted to explore a little bit with you guys. What are your thoughts about a national paid cadre, taking into consideration all that we've described right now?
Yeah, one of the things that we appreciate is that, one, that the government realized there's a gap, of course, of VHTs being volunteers, and then looking at how do we, because they have families to support, there are many things they also need actual money to pay for. So deciding that we need a number of cadres who are going to be paid, it is a good idea. The aspect that we look at is how does this roll out without, of course, affecting the existing already effort which has been in place for a while. Since originally, VHTs, I think we can say volunteers have been a part and parcel of the, maybe I can say, especially in our area where we come from, part and parcel of the community structures. I think we can say the backbone of structures, because we've had, previously we had people like called TBAs, and these have been traditional birth attendants who've been originally helping to see how mothers, you know, deliver in the homes if there's no care. So there has been that structure, maybe I can say for ages, and which the VHT structure started building from. So if a new cadre comes in, the new volunteer cadre comes in, there is a way that we should work hard, maybe as a government, to see that this structure is not broken because of the new structure coming in. So finding a way that these CHUs who are coming, community extension workers who are paid, work together with existing VHTs without conflicting, without you know, a contradiction, is a better platform that will see this roll out nationally.
It's a laudable goal, and I think that with, you know, experienced administrators and leaders like yourselves who know how to finesse, have gone through a lot of tough local questions and conversations around this. The interesting thing is that, you know, we're at a stage in community health where we're trying to build these national programs. And people say, okay, well, what's the best way to motivate people to work hard with a ratio of 1 to 1,000? Pay them. But that doesn't necessarily take into consideration these other factors that you've described so well. The motivation of a good job, a reasonable job, access to care for your family, a stocking system, and all the rest. If you if you have a bad job and just pay them, you're still going to have high attrition, potentially. It depends on the context. But as you show, you could have low attrition with a volunteer cadre. As they say, small is good, small is pretty, but large is necessary. I think what you guys have is a sort of a testing ground for how to do this well, how to introduce this paid cadre without discrediting or disparaging the work that these volunteer cadres have done for so long. Any from the rest of you guys, Edgar, Shem, anything that you feel is going to be critical towards this effect?
I think let's not be very drastic, and as Moses was saying, and because we know that community health workers, the VHT kind of setup, is really the first point for the community members to have contact with the health system.
Mm.
So the introduction of community extension workers means that communities, for example, would have to travel over longer distances to make that contact. And so that brings in all these issues we've been talking, we talk about of access, and so the problems just will come back, which we thought we had solved with placing community health workers within each village and within the villages within the zones. So going forward, I think we should avoid radicalism in saying that, you know, we now can do away with community health workers at the village level, and instead explore mechanisms of the two different cadres supporting each other in delivery of health services, and that we go forward using it as a learning process on how best to deliver health care with the two cadres in place. Yes.
Creating a sort of a team approach,
right?
In which they coordinate and work together. You know, some of the there are countries that do this. Ethiopia actually did it the opposite way, where they had first a volunteer cadre, then which was around HIV, then health extension workers, then they created the health development army, which was the volunteer workers, and they're a sort of a two-tiered system, but they coordinate carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries have their community health worker model that's very medical, very high ratios, and then don't benefit from that other cadre of workers that are out in the community really working, doing community-level work. The question of whether or not all of them should get paid at least a little bit, because it's actually a great poverty reduction mechanism. It's a direct cash transfer, and it really stimulates the economy locally. So that has its own logic. But how to do that where it's not just, you know, here's your money and, you know, just take your money and go. There has to be a finesse around that, which you guys are describing. What's the timeline? What can we expect to hear from Uganda? Do you think within how many years will we need to have you guys back here to talk about progress?
I think what is currently going on is the model of extension workers is being piloted in some districts in the north of the country. And the expectation is that when that pilot is accomplished, the extension worker strategy will be rolled out to other districts. So the time frame we are looking at maybe is over the next 5 years.
Great.
Getting to know how all this is going to work out. Yeah.
Well, if I haven't left the village or the earth, I'm going to have you guys back.
Thank you.
To hear about all the wonderful progress.
Yes.
Any final thoughts, anything that we didn't talk about that you want to make sure our listeners hear before we sign off?
Yeah, maybe. I think our model, MGH, Mbarara University, Kasese Local Government, Bugwe Health Center,
and the community.
And the community is a good model.
It sure is.
Yeah, I would like to invite government to come and see what we are doing.
Mm.
Probably you can be an example, and it can be rolled out to other parts of the country and probably the universe.
Mm.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I think for me, as my closing remarks, would to say that I think community health worker programs are still very important in our special low resource settings, since we continue to grapple with challenges of access and of course low resources to have, you know, proper infrastructure, medical infrastructure in the different parts. So we still look at community health workers being, you know, a very big army and force to see how they help our health care. And it is very important that partnerships continue to see how best to have, like you are mentioning, very good, impactful programs and also evaluate them very well. So we are happy, we are privileged to be working with one of the programs that we want to continue look at, see impact, look at gaps and continue, you know, changing and flexible so that we can continue suffering lessons so that, you know, the bigger world to learn from us. Thank you.
And your academic partnerships with Embarara University and with MGH, that's also very powerful towards that end.
Sure.
Yeah, my last word on this is essentially, yes, the Community Health Worker Program has worked for us. This morning I was just looking at stats from his health facility over the past year for malaria. And clearly what we are seeing in the outpatient department and the inpatient department, the number of patients being seen now is predominantly people aged 5 years and above, meaning previously before the Community Health Worker Program, where we had most of those patients being under 5 children, the picture has changed, which kind of indirectly tells us that the program is having an impact, for example, on the burden of malaria within the community. So for those advocating that because you cannot sustain volunteer health workers, my advice would be that we should look at solutions which might be very simple in ensuring that these community health workers still give a contribution, still do work in the community, in making treatment more accessible. I think one thing we didn't mention in the discussion as one of the ways in trying to get some kind of remuneration to the community health workers is that we have supported these community health workers in their kind of livelihood projects. So the expectation is that from those livelihood projects, they are able to generate a small income for themselves, and it is seen as part of the whole program. So essentially, we should look around trying to develop solutions, innovative solutions, to improve motivation for the community health workers and thereby ensuring that, you know, the services that they provide are quite sustainable and yes, and everybody is happy from the community level to the decision makers.
That's a beautiful place to end. It's about creating thriving communities with improved health, including thriving health system workers and community members. And you guys are on the front line in Western Uganda doing the incredible work. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your visit to Boston to come and meet me and to engage in this roundtable discussion. And that will wrap up this session. Until next time, thanks so much, everyone, for listening in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.